Mama Lorenzo.
And this is the Pop Style Opinion Fest. Hello, kittens. Welcome back to another edition of the PSO. I am the T in your T-Lo, Tom Fitzgerald. And I'm here with the Lo in your T-Lo, Lorenzo Marquez, my lovely husband.
Hey.
It is the end of a very busy week.
Yes, it's
Cannes Film Festival exploded all over our coverage this week. Also, if you are regular listeners, then you know that our big, beautiful ginger tabby boy, Tab Hunter, went in for surgery this week to have his tail removed. It was very sad.
Not all of it, some of it.
Most of it. He has a little stump now. He had a benign tumor on it, and we talked about this last week, so I know people are wondering. He had a benign tumor on it, but it was growing very quickly. They needed to take it off, but they didn't think they could save the whole tail, and it turns out they couldn't.
They couldn't.
And he's doing fine. He was on morphine for 3 days.
Very
loopy, staring at himself in the mirror. And
rolling around.
We put him in a soft collar with, we bought one for him because they sent him home in this horrible contraption.
Yeah, it looks like a Victorian. I said it looks like a Victorian torture device because it has
except
like.
Except it was clear plastic.
But anyway, it was horrible and it had this, it looked like a funnel and very
anyway,
high.
We got him a soft one that looks more like a flower and it has like spaceships all over it. And it basically looks like pajamas for a six-year-old boy.
Yeah, if you haven't seen it yet, it's on Instagram. And I'd like to thank everyone on Instagram for wishing wonderful things to our baby, and you guys are so awesome because, you know, I was very tense and nervous, as I always am every time I take my cats to the vet. That's just the way it is. And especially in this situation because I didn't know. And I was really worried that he was going to come home and you know, just have a meltdown.
But he's fine.
But he's fine, actually. He's actually fine. Doesn't mind the collar. I thought he was going to hate it.
Hasn't really noticed the tail situation at all.
Yeah, not at all. Or anyway, so he's doing really great. But I posted his picture on Instagram, and you guys were so nice. So I was actually, you know, just touched by all the words. So I appreciate it very much. Thank you.
Agreed. We both appreciate it. We have a bunch of things to cover today. Some queer history stuff, some TV stuff, and of course, some royal stuff.
I know.
I really didn't think we were going to cover Meghan and Harry's drama this week. I was like, nope, I'm not commenting on that at all. But then the story kept unfolding. And then I went to Lorenzo and said, so what do you want to talk about for the podcast this week? And to my shock, because he's always complaining about them, he's like, we have to talk about Harry and Meghan. And I'm like, all right.
No, I think we need to acknowledge it.
Anyway, we'll get to that soon. TV, I just want, because we haven't done a lot of TV talk lately, and I feel bad because we're just not watching the same show. Lorenzo is, everything is Spanish TV. Ever since we got back from Spain, all he watches are Spanish TV shows.
My Netflix suggestions are all in Spanish.
So we're not watching the same shows, which I'm going to get you back in line for this. Anyway, Silo on Apple TV Plus. Apple TV Plus is really making a name for itself with science fiction television. Like they have For All Mankind and they have Foundation. Silo is probably my favorite of them. It's one of the better science fiction series going on television right now. It's based on a book. It sounds really cliched, and I won't deny that it's not the most original idea in the world. It's post-apocalyptic, set on Earth in some future that you don't know the date at all, where the only remaining people after some sort of environmental disaster or perhaps nuclear disaster, there's 10,000 people remaining in humanity, and they all live in a gigantic silo underground. Hmm. And it's this massive organism where, it was obviously well planned by whomever, first drove them all underground. But it has smelting factories, and they have they have computers, they have electricity, they have running water, they have, they have an entire society with a certain vaguely 20th century lifestyle attached to it, except for they don't have cars or motorized anything like that. But it's basically an entire city underground. It's at the set, and I really wouldn't call it a set because I'm pretty sure most of it is computer generated, but it's still awesome to look at, this amazing structure that they all live inside. And Of course, there's a couple deaths, and then there's a murder. I mean, and then there's a mystery, and then there's an unfolding of a huge conspiracy, because the people who live in the silo don't know how long they've been living there, don't know what happened above ground, and have no concept of what exists above ground. So they've been living underground for possibly centuries, stuck in a roughly 20 level of technology, except they have computers, but really crude computers. They're more like data processors.
How's the cinematography? It's all dark?
No, they have electricity. It's fully lit. It's okay. A city. But it's all completely underground. It has a really interesting cast. David Oyelowo was in it. Rashida Jones is in it. Rebecca Ferguson, who I really love. She's great. She's very charismatic, and she's good in, not that this is an action story, but she portrays the heroine. She winds up becoming the sheriff of this underground city, and she starts uncovering this conspiracy. So if you ever watched Snowpiercer, the one about the train.
Right, the train.
It's somewhat on the same level of that, where it's sort of an allegory, but there's more work done to create a believable world, because no one believes that people could exist on a train that never stops. But this is an entire underground city that is somewhat well thought out. Things are explained about how people get around. I mean, the fascinating thing is you can only get up and down. It's 144 stories deep, and you can only get up and down using stairs. There are no elevators, and people live on entire levels and never visit other levels. Like, there are family members who leave to go live on another level, and they never see their family members again, because it's just this massive underground city where there's no transportation. Anyway, it's an intelligent science fiction story with some really good performances by actors that are always very, very watchable. I haven't finished it. Four episodes have dropped. I believe I'm up to episode 8. It gets very complicated. It goes in directions you will never predict. And I recommend it. I have no problem watching Rebecca Ferguson for an hour most weeks, because she's just, you know, I fell in love with her in the Mission Impossible movies. I thought she was amazing in those. And then she did Dune a couple years back. And yes, I thought that really, you know, she upped her standing as an actress. And I just think she's very watchable, and she's great in this. Ian Glenn plays her father from Game of Thrones, Ser Jorah Mormont.
Wow.
Yeah, there's a lot of names. There's a lot of faces in it.
I don't see a lot of articles about it. I don't see a lot of people talking about it.
It's weird. Yeah. It's the same thing with Mrs. Davis. No one's talking about that show, which just ended this week. There's a lot of shows.
That's what it is. Yeah,
you know, and then even like Ted Lasso, people are like, you only hear about it and people are complaining about it. I'm not watching Ted Lasso this season.
Ooh.
It sounds like it's not worth watching. Anyway, that's my recommendation. Silo on Apple TV Plus. It's intelligent science fiction. It's a little thought. What I found thought provoking about it was, what happens to a culture that loses its cultural memory when you don't know what America was, when you don't know anything, and at one point they, I don't want to give too much away, but like, they don't know what beaches are. They don't know what birds are.
One
of them refers to, there were things flying in the sky, animals. And I'm like, shit, they don't even know what birds are.
Now I have to watch.
And at one point, and this is early on, Rebecca Ferguson gets faced with an enormous pool of water down near the bottom of the silo. And she has a complete meltdown because she's never seen so much water before in her entire life. And it's not, I mean, it's like a lake, maybe. It's not like something awe-inspiring, but if you've lived underground your whole life.
That's very clever and intelligent.
Right. A lot about how this society is constructed is very, very intelligent. And they explain a lot as to how people live their day-to-day lives.
Now I have to watch it.
I've been telling you all week to watch it.
I will.
So that's my recommendation, Silo. And okay, what homoerotic Spanish TV show do you want to talk about? Because every time I walk past the TV, it's something. It's beautiful Spanish men.
No, well, they're all gorgeous in Spain. I can't help there. I can help you there. But anyway, no, it's just that ever since we came back, I've been watching a ton of Spanish shows from Spain, and they're just great. I love it. If you know any language, or if you have some basic knowledge of any language, Netflix is perfect for that, because you watch all these shows and you can practice a language, actually.
Yeah.
And you get to, like, I've been watching so many Spanish ones, like, that now I've learned all these expressions in Spanish from Spain, you know, like all these slangs and stuff. I love it, because you pay attention to the way they talk. And once you watch a ton of them, you know, they repeat the same expressions and stuff. So you really learn them.
Right.
So that's that. If you like languages, if you're working on a language and you want to advance your language, those international shows are perfect for that. And I do like, it's funny because I've been watching so many of them. Another thing that I find interesting is that you begin to understand a little more of the culture and how things are done in a country. In terms of television and film, you know what I mean? Like, in terms of entertainment, how it's approached. I felt that way when I was watching all these Norwegian and Scandinavian shows and you know, and so on. You get a sense of how things are approached and done. It is just entertainment. It's not real life. I know that. And I'm not saying, you know, what you see on TV is how things are in Spain. I'm not saying that. But you get a sense of how things are done and dealt with.
What they want to watch.
Yeah.
What shows do you recommend?
So there's a ton of them. But I'm actually, I was watching one called El Vecino, which is like the neighbor. It's this guy, one day he wakes up and he's a superhero. It's a very silly show. Silly, silly, silly. But very, very, very funny. His name is Kim Gutierrez. He's very funny. I've seen a bunch of stuff on Netflix. He's cute, very handsome guy. I think he's also a model, but he's actually a very good actor and funny, very funny comedian. So there's that, El Vecino. I think it's The Neighbor, or they kept in El Vecino. And there's also another movie.
Movie or TV show?
No, there's, this is a TV show, but there's also a movie on Netflix with him also called Honeymoon with My Mother, which is very, very funny. He breaks up with his fiance and he decides to go, you know, on a honeymoon with his mother. It's very funny. Anyway, so I think that's one great thing about Netflix is that you
there was that show Alpha Males that you were watching.
Oh, Alpha Male.
It was hilarious.
It was
I did watch some of it.
And the thing is that, you know, the title alone, I was like, I'm not going to watch this. This is offensive. But no, it's quite the opposite.
It was a very good modern satire, like satire of modern life.
Yes, it's hilarious. We were laughing so hard and it's just funny. And the women in it are awesome.
Yeah, really, really funny.
Yes. It's all about males being assholes, but the women are fantastic.
Middle-aged men not understanding how the world has changed, basically.
It's just funny, funny, funny. And it's just, I don't know. There's certain things with Spanish shows that they do that are so funny. I forget what show, but there was a scene with an Uber car. He was waiting for an Uber, and he's looking at his phone and like, yeah, you're telling me that you're coming, but I see here you haven't moved yet. So it's funny how, and I laughed so hard because, you know, that's what happens all the time with Uber. But my point is that they do a good job with very contemporary scenes and situations, and they do a good job. And there's also a ton of documentaries there. There's the Donna Summer. I think HBO is doing a good job.
Now we're off Spanish television.
Yeah,
but I
want to talk about documentaries. That
bad segue. So
anyway, whatever. HBO, I think
very excited.
They're doing a good job. I think they're trying to promote more documentaries, or they're, you know, approaching them in a different way. But there's the Donna Summer one. It's supposed to be very good.
Haven't seen it yet. It's not out yet, right?
No, I don't think it's out yet. We did get screenings, but I haven't watched it yet. And there's another one, not HBO, called International Mail, the story about the magazine, the catalog.
Who's doing that one?
I think it's an independent or a smaller, you know, production.
Is it Netflix or something?
No. But I'll let you guys know, because I'm going to ask for the screeners. And we're going to watch it, and I'll tell you how good it is. But it's just that it's so funny, because the whole International Mail catalog, every time we talk about it or we post something about it, everyone has something to say about those catalogs, because they're, you know, sort of like part of gay history. So they're doing a documentary about them, and I'll let you guys know as soon as I have more information about it. But that's that.
Fantastic. Those are Lorenzo's recommendations.
Yes.
All right, let's talk a little bit about... Our least favorite topic, but one that we keep needing to return to, is drag queens and queer people under attack in this country.
Yes, yes.
It was sort of unfolding all week. And as I said to Lorenzo, I was like, you know, not that I mind talking about it, but having written Legendary Children, spent years now doing press for that book, all literally, not to brag, but all over the world. We were just doing it for a Spanish publication last month. And a couple months before that, we were doing a piece for a Dutch publication. Like, we're still doing the history of drag, on the importance of drag queens. And the reason, part of the reason is, not just because, hello, it's a good book and it's worth talking about 3 years later, but also we're at a moment where drag queens and trans women especially, but queer people in the general sense, are under a lot of attacks from right-wing politicians and Christian fundamentalist groups. It has only escalated in the last few years because...
it's a fucking political theater.
It's political theater. Yeah. The Republicans are trying to grasp their way back into the White House and everything. Exactly. There's an election coming up, and I have lived through this so many times in my friggin' adult life that it's like, I can't believe we're watching this pattern play out again, and no one's noticing the pattern, or it sometimes it feels that way. Anyway, the LA Dodgers were planning to have their annual Pride Night, something they've been doing for many, many years. And
I was going
to
ask.
In fact, I think they've been doing it going back to the 90s.
I didn't know they've been doing it before. I don't know.
Most major sports teams have some sort of Pride event during, usually around the month of June. Well, not the teams that aren't playing during the month of June, but most of them have some sort of recognition of their LGBTQ fan base of one form or another. It's not really that notable anymore, but everyone on the right is looking for more ways to attack, more reasons to get their name. You know, look at Ron DeSantis. His whole career is vote for me because I hate all the right people and I'll hate them for you. And that's the message right now. So anyway, LA Dodgers organization was doing their LA Pride Night, and they had invited the LA chapter of the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence. And this is why I was like, we got to talk about this, because we wrote about the sisters in our in Legendary in the book, Children. Yeah. There was a whole subsection of a chapter devoted to their history. The LA chapter was invited to be honored that night. And I'll explain what the sisters are in a second. And then fucking Marco Rubio in Florida, he's not even in California, wrote this letter to the organization complaining that they were an anti-Catholic group and grooming children and all that bullshit. And the Catholic League got involved. And the Catholic League, as Kathy Griffin famously said, it's one guy with a fax machine. It's Bill Donahue. He's just this angry, angry old man.
Well, that's the thing. Fucking Florida. And you know, we have to be
real.
We really
have listeners in Florida, so don't
no,
say it.
No, it's fucking
like
Florida. Sorry. Love my listeners, but it's fucking Florida. And here's the thing. We need to be very careful with the states, and Texas also, and a bunch of others. We need to be careful because we might think and say, oh, you know, I don't live in Florida, so I don't have to worry about that. But look at what just happened.
Well, let me just finish saying what happened. Mm-hmm. He's red hot.
Oh, yeah.
I don't blame him. But they complained that the sisters were being honored this night, and the LA Dodgers revoked the invitation. And this was, I watched this happen. I was like, this is so disheartening because it's not just the attacks, which anyone queer of a certain age, we've all lived through this our entire adult lives. We're so friggin' used to this. But it's the idea that an organization like the Dodgers can so easily dismiss a queer group like that because they assume, well, they don't matter. They don't matter. There's not going to be backlash. Yes. The only thing that matters is outraged conservatives. What they are finding out is there was an enormous backlash, which I am extremely happy to
seen.
And I want to get into why that's important, but go ahead. I didn't want to slow you down.
I think that's important. Backlash is important because, you know, you think, oh, okay, well, the LA Dodgers, you know, oh, great. They have this Pride night. Well, how much effort did they put in this fucking Friday night if they just kick people out, you know?
Yeah, where's the pride in that?
Yeah, where's the pride in that? Not only that, the sisters, you know, the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence, they were going to receive an award. It's not just like a guest.
Yeah, that's what's so ugly about this.
So,
like, never mind. We're not going to...
had no problem because
somebody
Mark
complained.
Rubio and some Christian bullshit association decided that, you know, it's not right.
Because it's become... Listen, this is what we're seeing. Drag And trans life, trans existence had become normalized as all the way into this century, but it's also been normalized for a really long time. Christine Jorgensen was 70 years ago when she transitioned and became a celebrity. We have been living with trans people and drag queens for a long time, and Drag Race has been winning Emmys for 10 years now. They are attacking something that's popular because, first off, it riles up their base, and secondly, the goal is to make it harder for that thing to be popular, mm-hmm. to drive it to the margins, and to make it socially acceptable to do things like revoke an award for, you know, because one person complained. Let me explain what the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence are if you don't know. And you should know because you should have bought our book, but we won't hold that against you. They are an order of drag nuns. They are drag queens and trans women and queer people who dress in nuns habits. And yes, there is a camp factor involved in it. They were formed in 1979. It was a group of gay men in Iowa City, Iowa, who I believe the story is, or this is what wound up in our book, because there's various versions. They stumbled upon a bunch of nun costumes from a production right. of The Sound of Music, and they put them on, and they started going around, like, to the gay scene and everything, dressed up as these campy queer nuns. But what this was 79. What happened right after, right at that period, was the AIDS crisis exploded. These men moved to San Francisco, where they established the first chapter of the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence. And they have over, and now there are chapters all over the world, and they have raised money, millions and millions of dollars in the 40 plus years since they've been founded, all over the world, for causes like homelessness, drug awareness, for, you know, queer youth, for you know, for AIDS, you know, victims of HIV, AIDS patients, when the crisis was in full swing. They have helped. They have done nothing but help the community. Yes, they're doing it in clown makeup, in sequined nun outfits. But for Christ's sake, it's 2023. They are. There is no denying that they have been community leaders in every community they've been in for over four decades, and their contributions have been nothing but positive. So to revoke a community award just because some people got offended and they want to pull out that argument that they're grooming children, which they're not, it's just disheartening. What's nice to know is that people are pulling out of Pride Night for, and the Dodgers are feeling a backlash, and apparently there's all these internal, this is the latest, there's all these internal meetings to try and figure out what they're going to do about it. What I want to get across here is the importance of our allies in a fight like this, because when this first broke, I was like, yeah, all right, all the queer groups are going to pull out. Is that enough to scare the Dodgers? Because, I mean, this is of a piece with the Dylan Mulvaney thing in Bud Light. It's this idea that queer people have encroached on spaces where they're not supposed to be. Sporting events, beer commercials, that sort of thing. They're trying to drive them back to the margins. And the story of queer liberation, and my hardcore queer liberation brothers and sisters might get mad at me for saying this, but the story of queer liberation is also a story of our allies, because our numbers aren't big enough for a boycott on our own. Our numbers aren't always big enough to demonstrate in the street. We need our allies, and that's our literal brothers and sisters, our parents, our friends, mm-hmm. our coworkers. We are back in a period where you can't be a complacent friend to the LGBTQ community. You're going to have to be a friend who stands up and not just votes for our interests, but demonstrates against those who are trying to hurt us. So if you're in the LA area, please, you know, make your boycott of the mm-hmm. Dodgers known. Make them understand why.
I've always said that about allies. You know, you need them. I mean, as anyone, as a black person, as an Asian person, as anyone, any minority, you need
women need allies, yes, and men.
Yes, you need the support of others. You can't do everything within just the group. You can't achieve everything, you know, within just the group that right. you belong to.
Right.
You need the support of other people. And right now, the queer community and especially transgender people, they are being attacked. I mean, I'm sure you guys read about the school teacher in Illinois who, you know, had a book, you know, showed a book to her class, and one parent called the police to arrest her.
And the teacher in Florida who showed a Disney movie, and now she's being investigated.
what the fuck?
People need to push against this stuff. Because it's not just queer people who are being attacked here. It's your children.
No.
It's your children's right to have an education. It's your children's right to not have you politicize everything that gets shown to them.
And these people don't reduce their hatred. They expand their hatred. I mean, you know, once they get what they want, then they keep enlarging that hatred circle.
Right.
And you know, having more people and more people being attacked. And you know, it's trans people now. We're right now, gay people, you know, are on the back burner right now. So they're not so much focused on gay marriage and any of that for now. But, you know, these things turn.
Not that that makes it more important. It's important on its own, whether it affects...
Right. My point is that they are...
gay people.
Yes. They focus on one thing because, as we said, it's political theater. It's the presidential election coming up. So that's right. All that. They don't give a shit about any of this stuff. They don't care. They use all this to achieve whatever the hell they want to achieve, which is power. And these people are idiots enough to just buy it, to think that these politicians care about their needs. They don't. And anyway,
this has been Lorenzo's rant of the week.
Oh my God. This drives me crazy.
Yes, I can tell. And I agree with you. I absolutely agree with you. As I said, it's disheartening and it's infuriating, and queer people of all, you know, all the stripes of the rainbow need to stand up, but also our allies do as well. We need to shout this stuff down.
And I just want to say one more thing. Vote, 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 vote. Because, you know, we just had our elections here, and I actually...
Our primary elections in Philadelphia.
In Philadelphia only, and I believe in Kentucky, another state, also can't remember. But anyway, I posted on Instagram, and we had a brief conversation, and Tom was like, you do understand that this is local. I was like, yes, but that's how we fucking start. We start local. We start within our community, and we expand. That's why it's so important to vote, to participate, to be a member, to donate, do whatever you can to avoid this. Do whatever, because these people are up there. DeSantis and Rubio and all these assholes are doing what they're doing because we gave them the power to do it. So that's pretty much it.
All righty then. And I just want to reiterate the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence. They're the best of us. They, and one of the things I love about them and so many other people that we highlighted in our book is how they used their queer identity, their sense of theatricality and camp, that idea that the world is meant to be skewered and parodied and brought down a peg or two. It's very, very queer. It's very queer art oriented. And they are one in a long line of 100 years of drag performers politicizing their work or using it to help their communities. I mean, the number of drag performers who have raised funds for AIDS patients in their communities throughout the world, not just the United States, is uncountable. And the ones who have marched in favor of, you know, gay marriage rights and gay adoption rights and military service, every single fight we have fought in the last 50 years, drag queens were right there fighting it with us. Drag queens and trans women.
Right.
So right now, Tab Hunter,
it's all
in
over.
His big soft collar, is walking all over our recording equipment.
He just knocked our brand new
crystal candlestick over.
Oh, dear.
You talk while I deal with that situation. We're going to talk about Meghan and Harry now.
Anyway, but it's, you know, and you have to remember that it's not just books. Oh, okay, well, children can't read certain books. Yes, that's that too. But there's also more serious issues like gender-affirming care and treatment being denied. There's also the fact that anyone can deny treatment in Florida now. Anyone can deny treatment to the LGBTQ patients, you know?
Yeah, we're not vacationing in Florida anytime soon. We ever go on a book tour again, I don't think we're going to Florida.
No, I'm not going to Florida. And I hate every queer person, and I will making sure that you, as a queer person, if you're doing that, you're an asshole, you're an idiot.
I'm not talking to people who live there, okay?
No, I'm saying those who go and travel to Florida right now and spend their money there, if you live there, you live there. I mean, I'm not, you know, I'm just saying.
I'm just saying that I wouldn't want to go to a place where it's legal to deny me medical care.
And I will judge you
if something happens.
And I will judge you if you do. Anyway, they have the Protection of Medical Conscience Act now that they can just say, no, sorry, you know, my belief says that I can't treat you. So it's not just, oh, okay, they can't read a gay book.
Fucked up belief system is
that. I know. So it's not just like, oh, children can't read gay books. Okay, no, it's as I said, they keep expanding their hatred and their laws against gay people and the queer people. So in general, so it's serious. And yes, it's Florida and Texas primarily. Everyone is talking about them, but they're like what, 8 states, 14 states, God knows how many states with all these laws. Anyway, yeah. So we can't just sit and pretend that, you know, nothing is happening because it's not, you know, my ass. But you know, anyway, that's how I feel about the whole thing. Sorry, but
you don't have to apologize. But now, are we?
Yeah, we're done.
Are we done? Okay, yeah. Do you want to punch a pillow or something? Which I, again, wouldn't blame you.
No, I'm gonna go watch Netflix shows. Anyway,
we're just So we're gonna move on to Harry and Meghan. Which again, I was like, man, I don't want to talk about this. I don't. But then it started unfolding, and it sort of ties into stuff we've said about the two of them before, so let's just unpack it. So Meghan and Harry were in New York this week for the Ms. Foundation's Women of Vision Awards, where Meghan was an honoree, and we actually covered them on our site, covered the red carpet appearance. And the next morning, a spokesperson for the two of them released a somewhat histrionic statement about the near catastrophic pursuit of them for 2 hours through by paparazzi through New York City as they tried to get away from them. And like so many people, I immediately was like, what? Because that doesn't sound, I mean, if you've ever seen New York, there's just no way. Now, the story immediately evolved because people attacked them for saying it was a high-speed chase, and they never used the word high-speed. They never implied that it was a high-speed chase, but they did use very inflammatory wording, which was very, very clearly designed to draw a comparison to Princess Diana's death, which was a high-speed chase.
They did use the word catastrophic, right?
They did use a near catastrophic, several near collisions and blah, blah, blah. The bottom line is there were no collisions. It wasn't high speed. Nobody was hurt. And even the police came in and you know, said that, you know, basically, I think a light or two was run.
Right.
Someone ran a red light. But aside from that, no laws were broken.
Well, let me just say a couple of things. First of all, if you've never been to New York, there is no fast chase, you know, that never happens. I mean, you're lucky if you can drive 3 blocks without stopping.
Right.
You're lucky. I mean, the traffic in New York is insane. And it is, in a way, very stressful because we've been to New York a zillion times, and there are situations where you are inside an Uber car or a cab and you're surrounded by cars and you're stuck there,
right?
And people honking their horns, you know, it's crazy chaotic. Or you're driving and then you stop because people also walk like crazy in New York, and they'll cross the street like crazy in New York. They don't wait for the cars. It's very, very chaotic in general. And we're talking about a very, very, very tiny island. You know, it's not...
It's very congested. It's not like driving in Los Angeles. And I would even go so far as to say, I think even though I know London is a very, very compact city with its own insane traffic, I don't deny that. I think on some level, Harry was used to a certain level of deference
as to
how much the paparazzi were going to chase him around back home. But this isn't the West Coast. This is New York City. And you're at a super high profile event receiving an award. And there is going to be press attention focused on the two of you because you live a very public lifestyle. Now, before I go poking holes in the entire story, because frankly, the whole story did kind of fall apart. I will say this, they were subjected to harassment by the press, by the paparazzi, who apparently followed them for 2 hours. Now, the reason they followed them for 2 hours is because the two of them kept leading them on a chase instead of just getting the fuck out of the car and going home. They didn't want to see They didn't want the paparazzi to see the private home that they were staying at, which, okay, why were you staying at a private home in Manhattan and expecting privacy? What the hell were you, what? Like, and there's barely enough room to walk down a sidewalk. There's people, not going to be this huge buffer between you and the press in Manhattan. That's not the way it works.
I don't know. I don't have facts, but it looks like it's the same place where they stayed when you, if you watch the documentary on Netflix, isn't that the same home?
I have no idea.
I read stories that it's the same place where they stayed when, you know, if you watch the documentary, same place. So people already know where they
stayed. Anyway,
when
they led the paparazzi around for 2 hours because they didn't want the paparazzi to see where they were. Well, okay, right there. That's your choice. It's not like you were literally trapped in a car. You decided to stay in a car. And at one point they switched cars and then they switched cars back. And all this tomfoolery and just go home. Okay, just go home. Yeah, they'll probably be parked outside that home all night waiting for something. And again, I don't love that for you. I don't wish that on anyone. On the other hand, you guys are not leading a private life. You're right. Leading a public-facing
one. The feeling I get is that their fears and you know, concerns are justified. I mean, obviously. I mean, these people are famous and the
public. I'm sure Harry is very triggered by this sort
right.
of stuff.
Yeah, especially knowing, you know, your mother died in a most
right.
horrific way. You know, with paparazzi surrounding her, it is a horrific picture that you never forget as a child, obviously. So he has that, and I understand the fears and concerns.
But that's when advisors say, Your Royal Highness, no, we're not going to say this. Like, right. That's going to backfire on you. But the spokesperson's statement, I was like, that's just
right,
that's so histrionic that it's just, and it's inflammatory in a way that's almost accusatory against New York police and against the press. I mean, so there was no, I don't even know why it was like, when it first was released, I was like, why are we hearing about this? Like, well, okay, no one got hurt. No laws were broken. Well, why are you releasing a press release?
Because
about
I
this?
Think that they wanted to release something to prove their point that, you know, that's why they moved to LA. That's why they worry. That's because paparazzi and the whole thing. I understand all that, but I think, as I said, the fear and the concern is legit and it's justified, but how they deal with them is just the most unprofessional.
You don't embellish a story like
yeah,
that.
I mean,
because the first thing people did was pick it apart.
Right. The whole thing is that I agree. What else is the police going to say? Is the police going to say, yes, they were in very much danger? No, of course not. The police right. is going to say, well, nobody filed a report. I don't think things were that bad. Of course they're going to say that because they want to protect the, you know, the New York police.
But the
police.
Cab driver said the same thing.
But it's I thought it was funny. I actually laughed because the cab driver was like, yeah, it was fine.
It's like in New York.
It was like New York every day. And, you know, but it's just bad choices. I don't understand why you had a private car. Why at some point you decided to get
in a cab.
To get a regular cab.
This just sounds like you're looking for drama.
It's not
go ahead.
It's not like they were going to make the situation any better getting into a cab. I mean, quite the
right.
opposite.
Quite
because
the opposite.
Because the cab, you can see them inside. And in fact, they took pictures. And then it just generates a lot of talk against and in favor of them, you know, like that's just how it
it's
is.
It's hard not to see it as yeah, calculated in
because,
some ways.
Because people were saying, well, they were all sitting in the back, like one is on the phone, they're not wearing a seatbelt. I mean, it generates all these talk. Like, if you were really that concerned about safety,
right.
how come none of you are wearing a seatbelt?
And that, maybe they shouldn't be under that kind of scrutiny.
Exactly.
But why
exactly.
did you invite it?
That's what I mean. That's what I mean.
Always the problem with Harry and Meghan is, I am largely on your side in almost all of your complaints, the racism in the royal family, the racism in the British press, the hounding of the press and the way, you know, the way they step over the line with you two. I agree with all of you on that. These are good things to call out. And then you almost always embellish it in some way that I'm like, you're fucking up. Like, this is why people don't believe you. I believe you that you were scared and that you were hounded for 2 hours by invasive paparazzi. I do not believe that you handled that in a way that would have minimized it. You just kept going, and then you went to the press immediately. And not only that, a day later, went to the press and released a statement that they hadn't heard from Harry's family yet. Which, right. Like, oh, you're what? Just using, like, I don't, why are you telling us this? Why are you telling us this? It wasn't an assassination attempt, number one, so I'm not sure why the king is supposed to call you.
It just the whole thing felt very calculated to get press for themselves or to get sympathy for their complaints, at which I, as I said, I mostly agree with their complaints about how things are done.
I don't
come to award shows in New York.
I do think that whoever is in charge of their things are not doing a good job.
I agree.
I think that's what it is. It's not so much them, but whoever is handling their PR and safety and everything, it's just not doing a good job. Because, first of all, they didn't use the front entrance, apparently. They used like the back of the basement, whatever, to enter the event, which caused more chaos because they have all the photographers, you know, like pretty much like, you know, all like plaster against a wall of glass or whatever, trying to take pictures. That's why there is one picture of her that they all took. And she's walking through, I forget, it's like a store or whatever. We didn't post that picture because I was like, I'm not going there. I'm going to post the pictures that she's doing the step and repeat, you know, right. Just the red carpet and that's it. I do think that you can minimize that kind of chaos. I mean, just show up to the event, take a ton of pictures. You're there for the event.
Right.
Instead
and then go out of sight and go
like
home.
Instead of like, oh, no, we're only taking a picture. We're hiding. It just makes things worse. This is your first appearance, public appearance, after all that happened. The book, the documentary, the coronation. Of course, they're going to be all over you too.
Right.
Of course.
And I think it's hard not to think that they tried to just sort of maximize attention, sort of take advantage of the opportunity and it just felt very planned. It felt very like, of course you're going to get this level of attention. And driving around Manhattan for 2 hours, leading them on a marriage, why are you doing that? Why are you doing that? Go check into a hotel somewhere and have your security details stop them at the door so they can't follow you in.
Yeah, I mean, the decision of getting to their car, and then they decided to get into a cab, and then at some point they decided, no, this is horrible, let's go back to the police station,
I believe. We are
going to
piss off so many Sussex stands with They mismanaged their image a lot.
Here's my statement, is that I understand the fear, I understand the concern. Your mother died in the most horrific way, and your point always was that you were trying to protect your wife so that she doesn't go through the same thing.
Right.
I get all that, but I believe that the people who are responsible for your security or you know, PR and everything are doing a terrible job.
Right.
They're, you know, it's just causing more chaos. That's my overall statement. I'm not saying that they shouldn't fear whatever situation, but maybe they're not used to New York because, as I said, we go to New York.
They're not naive
often.
People. They're well-traveled people.
New York is chaotic. It's very hard to drive in New York, especially. I remember Fashion Week, trying to get a cab to go from one show to another. It's a nightmare. And people cross the street. They don't give a shit if a car is coming. It's chaotic. And on top of that, you put, like, I don't know, dozens and dozens of photographers chasing you. Yeah, it's a horrible, you know, place and situation to be in. But there are ways you can minimize that. That's all I'm saying.
You have the money to get people to make the correct plans. You also have the money to hire people to make statements to the press that don't set you up for international ridicule. I mean, when I Googled it this morning, there were stories about how their friends back home are making fun of them. And,
really?
Yeah. There's just a way to handle a story like this. I understand you wanted to get it out that you were harassed by the paparazzi, and that's your prerogative.
See, that
would
be the headline.
To put that story out. But when you made it sound, when you tried to draw a parallel to that, from that to your mother's death, people are going to sit up and be like, really? In New York City? And immediately pick the story apart. The story fell apart almost immediately.
Like I said, you only if you don't know New York, you can think that, you know, they were in actual, you know,
right,
danger. Because
I think in the moment they thought they were in danger. And Harry does have legitimate fears of assassination attempts, although I think they're somewhat overblown the further away from the crown he actually gets. I mean, I think William and his family are probably at greater risk than Harry is at this point. But if you can't be stuck in Manhattan traffic without panicking or having visions of your mother's death, well, buddy, you know what? Stay out of Manhattan or get back into therapy. I don't know what to tell you, but you can't be living this lifestyle of attending galas in New York City with, you know, step and repeats and photographers, and then complaining that you got press attention. It does, you know, and that's the other thing is I think they really miscalculated this time, because their American fans especially are on their side in terms of their war with the British press. But now they're starting to turn on the American press in a way that I don't know that people are going to be for. Like, they demanded that the photo agency release all the pictures and everything. And the photo agency sent out a letter today and said maybe a king could ask that. But in this country, you don't get to ask.
Oh, really?
You don't get to demand private property. They're overstepping their bounds, and they're starting to sound a little... When they demanded the release of the picture, I'm like, well, that's not how it works. You are at a public event. You are public figures being photographed. You don't own those pictures at all.
And my understanding is that they had not only their own security team, they also had the help of the New York police to take them to the event, right, and all that. Right. And you don't get that. I mean, a lot of people were saying, you know, a lot of celebrities... They all go to events in New York. They don't get that kind of attention.
Once again, I just feel like it backfired on them. They have good points to make about they're treated.
They do.
And then their team, I really think they have a bad team around them.
I think so.
Because I honestly think they're trying to do good in a lot of ways. They're trying to make some points about the institution, about fame, about the press, all of which are valid. And then every time it's like, really? Why did you word it that way?
That's the thing. They have a point. They have a legit concern. But just that term alone, near catastrophic.
Yeah.
I mean, because we got an email about it. And I was like, what? What happened? Oh, my God. What happened?
Right. Did they plow through a crowd in Times Square?
Oh, my God. I mean, it's so, like, you know.
Inflammatory. And, of course, it's designed to make you think of his mother. So, you know, sorry, Sussex stands, but they blew this one. And I really wish I hope they learn a lesson from it. You don't run to the press with a press release every time. I mean, when they released a statement saying that they hadn't heard from his family. And I was like, heard from his family about what? Like, literally nothing happened to you. You were stressed out in Manhattan traffic for 2 hours. Guess what? I've been there. Anyone who lives in New York has been there.
Have you met your family? I mean, they had to crowd the queen out to pay homage to Diana when she died. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
These people have no feelings. They're not going to make any statement.
No. Jesus. The whole thing is just very silly. All right. I believe we have wrung all the outrage out of our various topics this week, and we want to hear your outrage. So please let us know what you think of everything we said here.
And have a wonderful weekend.
Have a wonderful weekend and week, and we'll be back next week with whatever crosses our eyes or crosses our desks. Until then, take care of yourselves. Love you, mean it. Bye-bye.
Bye.